Welcome to the Hidden Node podcast. I'm Joel, and I'm here with my friend Nick. Nick, what's going on, man?
It's going well. It's going well.
Oh, actually, I said, what's going on? I didn't say how's it going, but it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
Well, I'm going to answer the question I thought you asked.
Well, okay, fair enough. So, okay, so last time we spent a lot of time talking about like 3D printing and stuff, but I believe that today it's actually your turn to get to talk about things instead of it just being my turn. Is that?
Oh, I think just you speaking is absolutely acceptable, but sure. Today I wanted to talk about and kind of get your view on fintech or a little bit of fintech.
Okay,
so. I was talking to my parents earlier today, and they thought that fintech meant technology companies from Finland.
I mean, so, I'm not going to lie, that is also, having no idea what fintech is, that is also my assumption. And it might be colored a bit by the fact that you and I both have friends that work in technology from Finland.
From a Finnish technology company, yeah.
Yes.
So fintech, in at least in the descriptor I'm using, is referring to financial tech companies.
Oh, okay. All
and
right.
I mean, maybe I'm just jumping on the bandwagon here, but I believe that fintech is the term used for these sort of young upstart, younger companies moving into the finance world.
Okay. Now, when you say like finance world, though, I mean, what do you mean? Are we talking about like personal finance tracking companies like Mint? Are we talking about there's like penny stock trading applications now, like Robinhood, I think, is one of them.
Yeah.
I haven't used it, but I don't know. It seems like that could fit a whole bunch of different areas. So what are we talking
exactly.
about specifically, or is it non-specific?
I think fintech covers all of that. So yeah, so in US, there's Robinhood, and in the UK, not that long ago, but a company called Freetrade started up, and that's the same kind of idea. So it's app first stock trading. And then in the UK, we've got a couple of fintech banks, Monzo, Starling, and what's the other one? Revolut, but Revolut's not UK based, but they're all relatively young and new banks that seem to be app first. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the first kind of point that I wanted to discuss with you. And like, I don't understand. I like it. I like the app first approach, but I wish there was a web UI as well. But I wonder why an app as the primary and sole way of interacting with these services is preferable or advantageous over a website. Do you have any idea?
I don't know why. I don't know. I've heard a few different opinions about this. So I tend to run pretty lean on my phone. This is just like Joel's opinion, Joel's experience here. But I always run budget phones. Like right now I have a Nokia 6.1, which is like $280 unlocked on Amazon. Being a Nokia, it's actually a fintech phone, right? A
Finnish Stop technology. Confusing me. Stop confusing me, thanks.
But I mean, it is a Finnish phone. No, definitely not. That is not the definition of fintech. Just to be absolutely clear here. Stop it, Joel. Stop it. But anyway, I've always run budget phones. I just always have. It's been a very long time since I have bought a, you know, top of the line, latest and greatest phone. And so I run light on apps on my phone. I don't want every single app. I don't want the Pizza Hut app and the Domino's app and the Papa John's app and the Little Caesars app. No.
You don't.
I don't.
See, that's really interesting because I kind of do. I like having these services segmented into their own little place on my phone. So if this is a different topic, but I'm very happy to go down this avenue. But
it's a decent,
like, for example, I don't have the Domino's Pizza app, but for example, let's say I did. I would much rather interact with Domino's Pizza through a well-designed app than I would through a horrible interface on the website because it wasn't able to cope with a mobile-sized screen, for example.
Right. And see, my preference is those types of apps. You know, I don't order Domino's every day. If I did, I'd have like a serious problem. Don't worry. I split it up. you know, Monday I do Domino's, Tuesday I do Papa John's. No, I'm kidding. But I don't use it. Like, how often would I use the Domino's app? It's going to be once every 4 weeks, tops, you know? I don't, mm-hmm. I'm not going to use it that often. And so I would rather go to a well-designed mobile website. Now, it's got to be a mobile website. It's got to be a website very specifically designed for my phone. And that way I don't have to have this residual piece of software sitting on my phone, eating up memory, prompting me with notifications, blah, blah, blah. But however, though, I think that when we're talking about fintech, I think that we're really, though, thinking about the differentiation between a mobile application and a web, a desktop website. Is that pretty accurate? I don't know. Yeah. I feel like making the comparison between mobile app and mobile website is kind of the wrong application here.
No, I think actually the way you just described all of that has just exactly answered my question.
Oh, because I don't even know. What was the question? I don't even, I forgot it. Maybe you never said it. I probably just forgot it.
No. So the question was, why do these companies have this app first approach to the exclusion of a website?
Right.
And I think you've just answered the question, because by making an app, they don't have to deal with websites that can cope with hundreds of different screen resolutions and screen dimensions.
I guess that's
and
true.
What makes these services so interesting, or one of the aspects, is that it can send me instantaneous push notifications. And therefore, if you make an interface that is through a website, be that a regular desktop website or a mobile-friendly website, you're never going to be able to push those notifications. And that's part of the whole service here. So, Joel, you've just answered it. That's why. Because if you offer this service that they could just use a website, they might not install the app.
Yeah. Wow. Well, there you go. I'm good, huh?
That's amazing.
I'm just really good at this. Yeah. I didn't even know I was answering it, and I did.
I want to tell you a quick story about open banking and a financial aggregator called Buxfer.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Can you spell Buxfer? Sorry, mm-hmm. I can't even say it. Say it and
Buxfer.
Spell it.
It's Buxfer.
Okay, that helps tremendously. Proceed.
But it is essentially like, it's a service similar to Mint.
Okay.
And but Mint doesn't work very well in the UK. So, because even though it will link to UK banks, it still shows the dollar sign, which I find extremely annoying. There are other financial aggregators in the UK. One of them is called Money Hub and Money Dashboard.
Okay.
And there are also some app first financial aggregators like Yolt, Yolt,
okay,
and Emma. And all of these things jump into your bank and scrape transaction data, and then are able to present that to you in a presumably better way than your bank can. Otherwise,
right,
they wouldn't have a niche. But anyway, the reason I was talking about Buxfer is that for a long time, I've used Buxfer to tick off every transaction that I make, be that through my debit or credit card,
right,
and PayPal, actually, mm-hmm, so that I get one website, one dashboard with lots of transactions from three different sources, and I can tick them off and categorize them.
So is the primary purpose of why you use a third-party financial tracking tool like this to basically tick off those transactions and go, yep, that one's legit, yep, that one's legit, yep, that one's legit? Is that the primary purpose why you're using a tool like that?
It's not so much that they are legit. It's more so that I have registered them and dealt with them as necessary. So
right,
I was using a single credit card for both personal and business expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And that was by choice. And therefore, I needed to tick off every transaction that came through. And then if it was a business expense, add it to my claim form. And if it was a personal one, remind myself, why did I spend money on that?
Right.
Okay, yes, now I remember. And I felt like it was a kind of a time sink, but I felt it was some value because, you know, it's like owning it, you know, understanding where my actual money is going rather than right. just this blind buying things on Amazon and then boxes appear and you don't know what's in them. And then you're right. like, oh yeah, that's right. I remember when I really, really totally, needed this thing.
Totally done that. Like a box shows up and I'm like, what did I, in fact, no joke, the Amazon guy just rang the doorbell like, I don't know, 2 minutes ago. it's kind of like stressing me out that there's actually a Nintendo Switch sitting out there on my doorstep right now. It's not for me. It's I ordered it for my sister-in-law to give to her husband, you know, Christmas time. You know how it goes.
I do.
But okay, so let me kind of give you like what we use a third-party financial tracking tool for. My wife and I one thing that we do is we do budgeting together. So we basically sit down at the beginning of every month and we go, okay, I know I'm going to receive X amount of money from paychecks. And then we sit down and we say, okay, well, $100 is going into this category. $100 is going into this category. You are going to buy this thing. I'm going to buy this thing. And so we basically just plan out where the money is going to go ahead of time. And we get it probably about 95%, 90 to 95% accurate is what I would say. You know, we make little adjustments at the end of the month. We go, oh, you know, wow, we only spent $95 on fuel this month. We thought we were going to spend 130. So yay. And then we'll put that, you know, that extra $35 into a different category. So we use a tool called Every Dollar, which it's actually a paid service. We actually pay $100 a year for it, but it's like totally worth the money. But yeah, it goes in and awkwardly scrapes transactions out of our bank account. It's really awkward. It's very, like the tool itself is great. You know, the transactions show up sporadically. And I think I kind of know where this conversation is heading, but the transactions show up very sporadically and then you drag them into your categories and then you basically watch each category burn down until you're out of money in that category. And then you stop spending money on, I don't know, eating out, you know? So
yeah. Okay. So I have a question for you, but before we get onto that one, in my particular scenario, I did categorize the transactions, but I didn't really care about the category. For me, it was purely a tick box to say, I have seen this transaction and I know what it is and I have done whatever I need to do with it.
Right. And it seems to me like you're using that tool to combat the ease of spending money with a plastic card, as opposed to the relative difficulty and pain of spending money with actual, you know, paper or metal money, right?
Yeah, I mean,
is it kind of like that?
Somewhat. It's more just the UI presented to me by my bank and by PayPal. There is no way for me to just put a tick box next to a transaction. Mm-hmm. I suppose I could do this in an Excel spreadsheet. But what I personally in this scenario was looking for was a UI that would just allow me to go, yes, I archive this transaction. I no longer need to see it.
Right. Well, it's like archiving. Well, here's how I handle email, kind of having grown up, so to speak, with Gmail. I didn't always have Gmail, but that's kind of the first email address that I took really seriously. And the way that I handle email is I keep it in my inbox until I am done with it, and then I archive it. So, you know, for example, if I reply to somebody and I give them the answer, I hit archive immediately. That conversation is now done. If I'm going to need to wait a couple of weeks before I can handle this, like, well, for example, there is like $100 from Alaska Airlines sitting in my inbox because they had a flight that was massively delayed, and so they gave me $100. That will stay in my inbox until I use it, right? And then I will archive it to say, done. I don't know. Is that similar to how
The sort of thing. Yeah. But there are any number of things that these aggregators can allow you to do. Categorization and budgeting being just one of the hundreds of different things that you might find interesting to do with this. It's sort of like just a better UI for viewing your financial status.
This is one of those classic examples where, okay, well, here's an example. In the world of Android, you can get stock Android from Google. It's a relatively clean experience. You know, there's not a lot of like fluff everywhere. It's smooth. It works pretty well. It looks like Google designed it. And then you have so many vendors that take Android and put their own stupid, dumb skin on it and just make it stupid. Like anything by Amazon is just awful to use. Like they just destroy Android, in my opinion. right? You know, Samsung, like it doesn't feel like Android at all. It's its own thing. And maybe that's intentional. But there's so many cases out there where if people would just leave it alone and just ship it as the vendor, basically as the vendor designed it, it would be so much better. Or just let someone else do it better. Like, oh, here's another example of kind of the point that I'm driving at here. Smart TVs. Have you ever used like a smart TV before, like other than an Apple TV, other than a Chromecast, something like that? Like built
not
in?
Not for any duration of time because of the ensuing rage.
Yes. Okay. So why? And so what I tell everyone, you know, like my father-in-law asked me like, hey, what TV should I get? I was like, not a smart TV. Just don't. Just do not buy a smart TV. Don't do that. Get a dumb TV that has HDMI and then just go, because they all do now, go get a TV and plug an Apple TV into it. Just let Apple do it for you because they make the best, quote unquote, smart TV out there. It's not built into the TV. It's something you add. That's going to be a way better user experience than whatever Samsung or Vizio can cram in there on a super bad, super low budget with no potential for updates, no good user experience, just awful. It's just really, really bad. And so this seems like one of those cases where what if the banks just gave everyone access to an API where you could pull transaction data out of your bank account, but they didn't even worry about providing any kind of online banking. They let third parties do that, you know? I mean, my bank has budgeting tools built in. They're not very good, and so I don't use them. I use a third-party service. Why not just buy the third-party service for all your users or something like that and then give them direct integration? I don't know. It just seems like there could be so many better ways to do this than how it's being done now.
Yeah. And so, what I want to know now is your service, how does it scrape the transactions from your bank?
Yeah, the worst way imaginable. It literally logs in as me, answers my security questions, you know, like under which tree did you bury your second dog that died or something like that, you know?
Yes. Like, yes.
It answers the security questions and then it literally just scrapes the transactions out using HTTPS as far as I can tell. Like,
okay.
Because the reason why I believe it does it that way is because it ever so often will prompt me to type all that information in again, and it is presented to me exactly like it is if I am logging into my actual bank account. You know, it's like exactly the same. And to make matters worse, there are thousands of banks in the United States alone. It's way more than hundreds. Mm-hmm. I know that it's got to be up in the thousands. And I use a tiny Idaho like a tiny bank that's just in Idaho. And so, I don't know, they probably have like 30 branches scattered throughout the state. And I really like them as a bank. But that means that the integration that they have had to hand build for my bank is very second rate compared to Wells Fargo or Chase or, you know, Bank of America, like the big, big banks out there that have a lot of reach.
Hmm. So that's what Buxfa used to do. Okay. Was I gave it my login details to my online bank credentials, which I was uncomfortable with, but at the end of the day, their UI was better than the bank one, so I had to do it.
Right.
But then kind of what has recently sparked my interest in the world of fintech, and there's a follow-up story about fintech, which is separate from the aggregator, but recently the banks in the UK have started forcibly switching over to open banking. And open banking is exactly what you just described. It is a documented, standardized API way for the banks to offer transactional data from their customers, but without those customers having to expose their login credentials.
Okay. I'm interested.
So it was, I think it started in 2016, and actually the United Kingdom Competition and Markets Authority issued a ruling that required the 9 biggest banks, HSBC, Barclays, RBS, Santander, Bank of Ireland, Allied Irish Bank, Danske Bank, Lloyds and Nationwide, to allow licensed startups direct access to their data down to the level of transactions.
Okay.
That was reading from Wikipedia.
Hang on a second. So this, are you saying that this is like a government mandated sort of thing where like...
Yes.
Wow. So the government actually got involved with this.
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't understand the, you know, interest, but this is, it's quite interesting though. So the government actually mandated, well, it says the United Kingdom Competition and Markets Authority. So... Sounds presumably, like,
as an American, that sounds like government to me, which means like it's bad.
Government in disguise, right?
Right, yeah.
But so they forced it on them, and now, 3 years later, the banks are, they have open banking, but they are now starting to make it more difficult for these aggregation services to log in with your credentials, doing things like two-factor. Oh, we know your phone number, here's your one-time code because you want to log in.
Right.
Which, all in all, it's more secure this way. I don't have a problem with it. However, and here's the crux of this story, is that the open banking, it requires the service to have an existence within the UK. So what this means is that for a service like Mint or Buxfer, in this case, who do not have an entity in the United Kingdom, for them to access the open API and implement it into their service, they now have to use a third-party company to bridge this gap. So now there's a niche in the marketplace for these open banking bridge companies, and I think there are 3 or 4, and I don't know the names of them, but the one that Buxfer chose to use was called Salt Edge.
Okay.
Right?
Just like some random, hey, what do we name our bridge company thing? Hey, there's some salt on the edge of the table over there. Let's call it Salt Table. No, it's dumb. Okay, Salt Edge.
I mean, who knows? Who knows? I'm sure these companies did other things, but what this meant was that then my bank, I was forced to use Open API and give the API access to Salt Edge, which is fine. I don't really mind how the data gets into Buxfer as long as it gets there. And then it stopped.
It just quit working.
Yeah, so I think it's my, I think in my particular scenario, I think it was the bank's fault. But so for a long time, it wasn't pulling data from the credit card. It was able to pull data from the debit card.
Not the credit card.
And even worse than that, it was getting the balance, but not the transaction data. So all very
good for it. This is kind of working, sort of. And also making you think that it's working too. There's like not a worse way for something to fail than to make you think it's working, but not actually be working.
Yeah, so this has all been very annoying, and then something else happened, and I ended up with 2,686 duplicates.
Oh yeah,
of one transaction.
Oh, of one transaction.
Right.
So with every dollar, the thing that we've ran into is we'll get like 100 transactions in. Yeah, it's actually 50 of them. They're just all doubled. They're all duplicated. It's so difficult to go through and what if some of those we've already sorted them out into their categories? It's like, well, now we don't know. We have to manually go through and look at each category. It's like, oh, it's just, and it's frustrating too, especially since we pay for the service, but I know that it's not their fault. I know that it is my bank's fault for locking them out of the account temporarily or something. I don't know. I just don't get the feeling that this is their fault.
So that's exactly the same thing with Buxfer. It's not, I paid like £20 for a year's worth of Buxfer because it was making this whole process much easier, but it's not their fault. It's now the bridging company. But nevertheless, my frustration is with you, Buxmer, because I can't see the transactions.
Right. And so, if you're anything like me, too, like these kinds of services, too, you're kind of a fan of the service. Like you really want them to make it, you know? And so you're willing to put up with a certain amount of things going wrong, you know? Mm. I don't know. Are you similar to me in that way that, like, there's... Well, for example, when we talked about the Prusias, like, I will overlook some of the glaring problems with the Prusia, although, hang on, let me think about what those are. I can't think of what those might be. But if there was a glaring problem with the Prusia, I'm going to overlook it because I'm so passionate about the product and I think it's such a good product. The same is true for every dollar. Like, I think it is such a great product. It's so good. Yes, it does have a couple of these little bugs that may or may not be their fault. I don't know, but I'm willing to overlook those because I want it to succeed. And sure. I want other people to use it too.
Yes, to an extent. I think with Prusia, I could be on board with that. With Buxfer, it is purely the only service that I found that gave me the style of UI that I wanted.
Right.
In fact, many of these services boast that they have automatic categorization of transactions.
Right.
And if that's what you were using the service for, categorizing your expenses, that's a really good feature. But because of the very niche task that I'm trying to do, I don't want it to categorize them.
Same here. Yeah.
Okay.
So my wife and I, we teach like these, these kind of financial independence classes, just like helping people get out of debt, you know, how to stay out of debt, that kind of thing.
Mm.
And we always show them every dollar and they're always like, cool, will it do it automatically? And we're like, that's not the point. The point is that you manually, you have to touch every single transaction and categorize it yourself. And that helps you understand where your money is going, you know, like a chart. Yes. Or a graph. I mean, that's helpful, but it's not enough. You need to feel the money going to places, you know?
Right.
So I'm with you.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Yeah. I don't want it to automatically I don't want it to do that automatically. Now Mint does that, but that doesn't help me at all. That's not what I need. So,
and there needs to be we're going down that avenue there of giving the user options, but
yes,
why not have that as an option, like auto-categorize features or auto-categorize my transactions or not.
Nick, you're speaking my language here. Like, so many times, you know, you talk to a software developer, we've both worked for software companies, and you're like, they're like, yeah, we're going to make it do this. Well, what if we gave them a checkbox? No checkboxes. The way that we made it is perfect, and we know what they want, and if they want it the other way, they're wrong. Why, Nick? Why? But this is a thing with all software developers. No offense, software developers. This is a thing with all software developers out there that they I don't know. It just drives me crazy. But yeah,
well,
don't care about automatic. I don't want it to automatically categorize. And if it does automatically categorize, I want an option to turn that thing off. I don't want it.
I think options are good, although I understand and appreciate the let's not end up with an airplane cockpit UI. I'm all on board for that, but somewhere, what service was it? Zoom, actually. You know, Zoom inside the app, fairly limited options. Mm-hmm. But then there's a box which you can click on. It takes you to a website, and then you've got like pages and pages of minute little tweaks of
it was beautiful.
That's great for the people who want to do those little tiny little adjustments to the way they...
And you and I, we got in there, we were like, check, uncheck, check, boom. And then we never went back to that page ever again. And so it didn't clutter up the UI. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
No. Like, I'm all for hiding advanced options like that or putting them just somewhere that they're not right in the way. Because again, yeah, like you said, you don't want it to look like an airplane cockpit. But at the same time, I mean, if you don't give me that little checkbox, you might completely break my ability to use your product or use your application.
Right. Yeah. And
Nick, what are we doing? Why are we not founding a software company right now? Why are we wasting our time with a podcast?
I don't know. Possibly because it's much easier for me to flap my lips and talk about solving these problems than actually doing it.
These guys are wrong and they're dumb and they're doing it all wrong. And yeah, they just are. That's so much easier. I agree.
But so rather than me just talk about problems, I think I have a solution.
Nick, that is not the Hidden Node podcast way. Like, you are breaking the very fabric. You're tearing the very fabric of this pod. No, go ahead. I want to hear it. What's your solution?
I was sat next to Dan Jones during the ECSE troubleshooting.
Okay.
Of course. And I think I was subjecting him to some of my angst about Buxfur, and he was like, "Well, why don't you just use, you know, Monzo?" And I kind of knew about Monzo. This is one of those fintech, young, app first, disruptor banks in the UK.
Not
from Finland.
Okay, I'm tracking barely, but
I set up an account with them, and I got to say to you that the experience has been excellent.
So does that mean that Buxfur's days are numbered? And so they're,
yes.
So, okay, Monzo, can you spell it for me just so I know?
Monzo.
Okay. All right. And by Z, you mean Z. Okay. Got
Correct.
It.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. So wait, it does the same thing that Buxfur does as far as like allowing you to check boxes or what?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't even do that. In fact, it goes about things in a different way, but I think so. It's going to force me to change my habits. I will actually now separate my personal expenditure and business expenditure.
Right.
But one thing, in fact, the answer to your question is that no, Monzo does not solve this particular aspect. Although actually you can categorize, you can add hashtags to transactions.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Inside the app. And so therefore I could do the same thing by just putting a hashtag checked by right. every transaction once I've looked at it.
That's a lot of buttons to press as opposed to pressing one button before, though.
It is, but just like as is becoming of these fintech apps, because they're fintech companies, because they're small-ish and they want to listen, they have a feature request page. So
Yay.
I could ping them on that and say, hey, I really need to apply hashtags to my transactions. Could we have a swipe left on a transaction to then bring up that as an option?
Right.
So that could be something I could do. But the point I think I wanted to bring up here was this instantaneous feedback. And so it's quite an amazing feeling, or quite an amazing experience. So I'm so used to making transactions on a credit card or my debit card, and then I'm being forced to wait 12, 24, 48 hours before they appear on my statement.
Right.
Do you have that?
It's like with every dollar. Well, okay, so if I go look at my online bank, it depends. Mm. Sometimes,
okay.
Now there's, you know, you can run things as debit or credit, and we exclusively use debit cards. That's a whole nother podcast to talk about that.
Yep.
But it's like, it depends on whether they're run as debit or credit. If I forget which is which, but one of them shows up instantly, one does not. And then there is a certain completely seemingly random delay between when they'll actually show up in every dollar.
Okay. Ah, but so for every dollar, I can understand that somewhat, because this is another service pulling that data. But for me, even logging into my online bank and looking at my statement and transaction history, they're not to the second live.
Yeah. Now, I think I know. Now, I don't know how different things are in the UK versus the US, but story time. I used to work at a pizza place, and every night, so we had a credit card machine next to the cash register, and we'd run our credit cards all day long, debit cards, credit cards, whatever. We ran everything as credit. So no PIN numbers, nothing like, you know, print off a receipt, they sign their name. I think that's changed since this was many years ago now, but I think it's all PIN numbers now. But at the end of the night, we would settle all of the transactions. And so we didn't even, like, they were all authorized ahead of time, but we would not actually reach into your bank account and take the money out of your bank account until we settled all the transactions at the end of the evening. There's a little sub menu that, you know, in the little payment terminal, there's a little sub menu you went into, and you went to settle transactions, and then it would talk to the intertubes and settle it all. And then that's when it would hit your credit card.
So that probably goes some way to explaining why this is a normal behavior for there to be this delay.
Right.
But what happens with Monzo and presumably Starling and Revolut and all of these younger apps, whether the money's gone or not, it gives you the feeling that it has. So the instant I make a transaction, my phone is going, boop, here is the transaction, this is the vendor, this is the amount. And that instantaneous feedback is fantastic.
Right.
Even, and I really, another thing that was really interesting, I bought cinema tickets with the Monzo card.
Hang on, those are like then, those are like movie tickets, right?
Yeah, movie tickets, exactly.
Right, okay, cool. Thanks for translating it to English for me, I appreciate that.
My pleasure. And the website paused, and then it sort of said, waiting for authorization, and then the phone goes, bzz, open up the app, and it's saying, do you want to authorize this transaction of X many pounds to this vendor? You just go, authorize. And then it was done. And this is a new age way of dealing with financial transactions.
Yeah.
It's...
Okay. Similar story, but a very different experience is a few days ago, I was trying to order a Prusa actually for my, for one of my family members because a lot of like the way that my wife and I operate, we have one bank account. We both have debit cards for that bank account. And it's a little bit tricky when we're both kind of looking at financial data regularly around Christmas time because she'll go like, oh, you spent $300 at Patagonia. I wonder what that was for. You know, now she knows she's getting, a coat for Christmas.
Ah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a problem. So my wife and I have this agreement where like she does her Christmas shopping and then I say, and then she says, don't look at every dollar until I categorize everything. And I go, okay. And you know, so on and so forth.
Right.
A lot of our family members, they don't have like a tracking system like that. And so what they end up doing is they message us and say, hey, I really want to get a Nintendo Switch for so-and-so. Can you order it for me and I'll pay you back after the holidays or I'll pay you with PayPal or something like that. So that way it's masked. They can maybe see how much it was, but they can't see where it was to.
Is that because your family members are also having shared accounts with their spouses?
That is exactly it. I mean, two cases, like my wife's sister and her husband, they just share a checking account. My sister and her husband, exact same thing. They just share a checking account. There's sole breadwinners in each family. And so, you know, basically one income families. And so, yeah, they just share a bank account. So that's a little bit of a problem. Where was I going with all that? I was going somewhere and I forgot. I do this all the time, Nick.
You were going this way because...
Think back. What are we
the
doing?
The instantaneous feedback of transactions.
What the heck? What was I talking about? This is happening way too often now as I'm getting older or something, but I'm sure it was a great conclusion that was waiting to happen. It'll come back to me in like 5 minutes. We'll be on something completely different. I'll be like, I remember what it was, and then we'll figure it out.
Okay.
But,
well,
yeah.
Whilst you work out where you were going with that, I think that... The final point that I wanted to make on this kind of instant feedback for transaction was I can see there being an argument to be said for that, you know, instant gratification on all things is not a positive. There are several scenarios, not with anything to do with banks, but there are several scenarios where delayed gratification is a skill that is worthwhile and should be cultivated. But I think that the impatient feelings that I have now for the transaction history, I don't think there's any value to learning, you know, patience for waiting for where my transactions of money that I've spent to appear on my statement. I think
so. You're saying that there is no advantage to making me wait patiently for this. This is something that I should expect to have right now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or at least historically, when there was a delay and that couldn't be worked around, fair enough. But now that companies are offering this instantaneous acknowledgement of transactions and being able to put that into your feed on your within the app,
yes,
I think it's a great step forwards.
And this brings me to the situation that I was in the other night. You remember on Lord of the Rings, like Gandalf's trying to remember which way to go, and Samwise is like, he's remembered. That's just happened to me. So I was trying to order a 3D printer for my sister to give to her husband.
Yep.
And I went to order a Prusa for her, and I went to place the order, and it's like my bank saw that I was trying to order something in the several hundred dollars from a company in in Europe, and they were like, no, heck no, you're not doing that. And so I try like four times. I'm like, try it again. It's not working. And so, finally I go to her and I was like, it's not working, Mr. Frodo, or something like that. It's just not going to work. And I'm going to stop with the Lord of the Rings stuff right now. That's ending right here and right now. I apologize to you and to anyone listening to this. So then, like, I don't know, 8 hours later, I get an email from my bank saying, hi, we noticed all these transactions. Do you want to authorize them? And I'm like, it's too late for that now. Like, we've already found a different solution. I had somebody else order it. Like, you know? Yeah, no, it should have been instant. It should have been absolutely instantaneous. Hey, do you want to authorize this? And I hit yes. And then Prusa Research goes, sweet, your order was authorized. And that's that.
Agreed.
What should have happened.
And I have been traveling for Ekahau. I've had expenses, transactions that I'm trying to do, and then it fails because randomly my old big bank in the UK was like, no, we didn't know that you were going to this country. You should have told us. You're like, no, I really shouldn't. Like, I don't want to have to call you or use your horrible website to tell you that I'm going to this country and then I'm going to this country. Like, your service needs to work wherever I am.
Yeah, totally. You see that I travel consistently. You know that I travel all around Europe consistently. Your machine learning algorithm should be better than this. You should be able to know. And of course, those transactions, they always fail. Like, when you are at the end of a 24-hour day of traveling, like, you've been on airplanes for 18 hours, you've been in airports and you've taken an Uber or a Lyft to your hotel, and you get to your hotel and you're so close, and they go to place a $200 hold on your card and it fails. And you're like, bank, I just want you to give them the money and I want you to do it right now. But of course, your bank is in a different time zone than you are in. And so when you call them to sort it out, they're like, well, you're currently closed right now. It's like, you know, like,
yeah. Crazy.
It's almost as I probably sound as if I've been in that exact scenario. And the reason why I probably sound like I've been in that exact scenario, because I believe that I have been in that exact scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's great. So I'm really, really upbeat and positive now at the possibilities that these younger fintech companies are going to offer. Just one last thing. For example, receipt management, like inside the Monzo app.
Okay.
When that instantaneous transaction appears, I can take a picture of my receipt and put it against that transaction already in the banking app.
Wow. That is pretty spectacular. Okay, so as you know, I like didn't really have a real job for like 14 weeks or so. Instead, I just got slammed with contract work. That was the busiest 14 weeks I've ever had in my life. In fact, like taking a job was almost like, I wonder if I'll actually get to like slow down now that I have a job again.
Okay.
Like it was crazy. It was just absolutely nuts. And only two nights ago or so, I finally sat down and went through the massive pile of receipts and categorized everything, you know, like saying, okay, this one was with this specific job, this was for this specific job, this is when I was traveling for this event. And that was really important for me to be able to see like which jobs made me money, which jobs, you know, made less money. For example, you know, just to look and see kind of what my situation was with the whole thing and how well it worked. And it was a pain. I mean, I have an Excel spreadsheet that is hundreds and hundreds of lines long. And I've got a giant pile of receipts just in case I get audited for taxes that I have to hang on to until taxes are done this year. What a pain. And that made me realize, if you're running a small business or something like that, the value of using some kind of finance application like QuickBooks. And also, I'd probably have to find some kind of receipt management application too, so I can keep digital copies of these receipts, because I literally have a giant envelope in my office here just full of receipts. It's really bad.
So that is exciting to see kind of where these companies will go. And the receipt management thing, that's something else we can talk about, but not today, I think. But there's so many different services out there and different UIs and different approaches to this. But I haven't yet found exactly what I need. I wait with bated breath to find out whether Starling and or Monzo can be that app.
Yeah. And now that I kind of know that these things are beginning to exist, it makes me wonder, you know, what kind of alternatives we're seeing here in the U.S. Although I've noticed that the U.S. seems to be very far behind everyone else in everything finance. You know, for example, a few years ago, I went to the Netherlands, and I got there, and I didn't have a chip on my debit card. And they they inserted my debit card into the card reader, and it didn't work, and they pulled it out to just check the chip. And I'm like, it doesn't have a chip? And I'm like, no, we don't really have those in the U.S. And they're like, we literally cannot run this card. We cannot run this card. And fortunately, it only happened with one vendor, and it was fine. I was able to work around the issue with some cash or something like that, but... The U.S. has always been ridiculously far behind everywhere else for some reason, and I worry that you might be starting to get some of these cool services that can tap directly into an API. What was the name of it again?
So that's open banking.
Open banking, okay.
But I think you might be in a position to hop, skip, and jump past that, because I know that Monzo are making inroads to the U.S., so you can jump on their U.S. waitlist already.
So
they are
April 15th, 2019, why open banking won't work in the U.S. from Forbes. So there's that. But okay. Let me look up Monzo. Oh, and when I type in Monzo, the very first thing that Google comes back is Monzo, United States. Monzo is launching in the USA. It's coming to the U.S. We're doing things differently. Okay. It sounds like I need to check Monzo out and see. Help us build the bank you want to use. Monzo account is instant spending notifications, stress-free traveling, easy budgeting, and support from real people whenever you need it. Huh. Interesting. Their little screenshot here, how they have they even have an icon for each vendor next to the like Kroger, Amazon, Spotify, AT&T, CVS. That is fantastic.
And it is little quirks of the UI like that make it feel comfortable. And we don't have time to go into that one today. But for example, Free Trade, the UK version of Robinhood, when you're inside that app, the stocks look like apps. So you want to place a buy order on Tesla stock? Well, it's a rounded corner square with the Tesla logo in it, and that's so much more tangible than just a line item in a list of
touchscreens on modern phones, starting with the iPhone, and when they started to do applications on the iPhone, which was not instant. It's hard to think of an iPhone without an app ecosystem, but it was a thing for a certain amount of time. I think it was like a year, 6 months, 2 years, something like that. It's given developers so much freedom to come up with awesome solutions, make things so easy to use. Man, I'm starting to really think that the desktop operating system as we know it is probably going to go away in a few years, more or less. And I think that I think mobile operating systems are probably going to take over at some point. It's so good. Things are just so polished and so good, even on Android. Even Android is pretty good. It's not perfect. It's not as shiny as iOS, but it's still pretty good. And I don't know. It's just the world of apps. I know earlier I said that I hate having everyone's app on my phone.
Yeah, you did say that.
I did say that. But at the same time, I do recognize that apps and the flexibility with touchscreens and all that have really given us some very cool products that are very easy for people to use.
That's great, man. Hey, thank you very much for listening to me waffle on about fintech.
Yeah, well, I feel like I learned a lot about it. I feel like I'm probably going to check Monzo out now. We should call them and see if they want to sponsor our podcast, because we have... How many listeners do we have at this point? We have... Let me count one... Zero? None?
Because
we
haven't actually... Two.
You and me.
Yes,
we have two listeners. Well, we'll have to call them and ask them if they're interested in sponsoring. And next time we start, you know, maybe we'll get on there and be like, you know, this episode of the podcast is sponsored by Monzo, you know?
Absolutely.
Probably not. All right, Nick. Well, hey, that was a lot of fun. Let's do this again soon.
Yeah, man. Thank you very much. Take care. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Yep. Bye.